Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for September. I don't know, today is the 7th, but this will go up on the 9th. So pick your day.
Yeah.
We're sitting here watching our children play soccer.
Because we're parents that do soccer.
Are you? No, we're parents who drive our children to do soccer.
Right. All the good parents are outside of
the
car.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
Sitting... Looking attentively at their children.
Parents in chairs watching their children. Whereas we're in the car huddled down so nobody can see us judging our children. I don't know if our children are actually playing soccer or if our children are like running past the ball.
Oh, one of our sons, our youngest son, is already exhausted after just running down the field once, and that was enough for him.
Well, no, he's engaged.
Yeah, he's engaged.
He's making friends.
Yeah.
I can't see the other ones. One of our children is doing competitive soccer, which is which is unpleasant for me. Actually, not too much because I haven't actually taken him anywhere. He's managed to get rides to everything, and when there's away games, he rides with the coach. So
we should get a soccer. Something.
Mom.
Some kind of bumper sticker for our car so that people know.
We do.
That we
care.
We care. We take our kids to sports things.
Message. We care. We could watch our older son play soccer, but he's forbidden us.
I know. He's embarrassed. He's afraid because he says he's afraid he's going to mess up if I'm there. So, or if we're there watching and he doesn't want us to think he doesn't want me to think that he's a bad soccer player, so
he said that
I'm forbidden to go.
Because you're so judgmental.
I've never said a negative word at all ever for any of his sportsing. I've always said you're that's great, you're wonderful, excellent.
Does he just not believe
you're gonna be
you?
A pro?
No. Know that you're like...
See, but with soccer it's not the same thing. Even if he was to be a pro one day, he'd only make like $20,000 because no one cares about soccer in America.
That's really... I told him that the women's team, what happened to the women's team when they won the World Cup.
Yeah.
They got paid less, and then they came back to America and played against a high school boys team and lost. And he was really shocked. He was like, oh my word. I mean.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's just.
He was dumbfounded. He always has something mean to say, but he didn't even have anything to say. He was really shocked. So. No, we are going to watch him play soccer. He's just going to let us know when that's acceptable.
Right.
So, well, we weren't going to talk about that today.
No.
Today we're going to talk about conflict in the church.
Yes.
Because that's fun.
Well, no, it's been a perennial, like, every year. Is that the right word, perennial or annual?
Perennial comes over and over again.
Yeah, it comes over every year. If you've been in ministry, you know this. It just happens that... you know, suddenly from the bowels of the undercurrent of the church, something will pop up suddenly that's been brewing for a long time and you hadn't known about it and no one's known about it except for the person who's
unhappy
and you suddenly have to deal with it. Or you wake up one day and you find out, well, that someone has been, or a group of people have formed a little band together and are talking about other people, and...
Or two people suddenly who you thought were friends are now in deep antagonism towards each other.
Right.
Can't speak and can't look at each other, and one of them can't come to church because the other one is there.
Right.
That kind of thing.
It's. I mean, almost all those cases, they follow the same anatomy or same trajectory. They develop in the same way. So we thought, why don't we talk about that? Because... I'm sure you all want to know, and I'm sure that if you're a human being, if you're a human being in a church that you've seen it, or maybe you're participating in it right now.
That's mean. I don't think anybody. I don't think our listener would do that.
Yeah,
our listener is not that kind of person that takes offense and like doesn't. That our listener is just not that kind.
Yeah.
So this is irrelevant to literally the whole world, and we're wasting our time.
Yeah.
So, well, do we want to have, like, How do you want to proceed on this? Because we obviously prepared a long time.
Yeah, we did. We studied this question.
Did you want to do like tips, or did you want to talk about? Well, I think we could do.
Maybe we could use a past event.
Why Matthew 18 doesn't work, and why you should never use it, because it doesn't work, and it's stupid.
Are you being sarcastic?
I mean. It actually does work.
That does seem to be the baseline assumption that people have about Matthew 18, is that that's crazy and stupid. Why would I do that? Why would I go to the person I'm upset with and talk to that person? I'd rather...
Because, I can't do that, and I shouldn't, because I'll hurt that person. Never mind that I'm very hurt, and that I'm hurting all over the place.
Right.
And, like, my pain is causing me to not be able to function in life and in the church, and so... But I must suck it up. I must just suffer silently until the moment when I actually boil over and begin to bleed out on the parish hall floor.
Right, so Matthew 18 is very clear. If someone has sinned against you, or someone's just sinning, and you know and no one else does, and that person's, because that person's also in the church, that person's your brother or sister, Jesus says that you need to go to that person.
I mean, but what does Jesus know about it?
He doesn't know my situation.
Anything about it. Like,
right.
First of all, he doesn't have conflict with people because he's love. And he's so loving that he encompasses the world within his person.
No, but I do think...
And so he didn't ever have this happen to him. He never was conflict, in conflict.
Right.
And he never had to go to somebody directly to say to them...
You're sinning.
You're wrong. I mean, it's not like he became a human person... and came to earth to confront directly all them that were sinning for a long time. Directly, he went directly to the people who were offending him most and said to them directly and in person, because he actually took on human flesh in order to do Matthew 18.
Well,
that's irrelevant to everything that happens.
Right. Well, it's interesting, because I think this is a pretty common thing that happens. People will read the Bible, and they'll see something like a very direct command, and somehow not think that it applies in their particular situation. Like, this can't be talking to me right now, and I'm not sure what it is, or I wish so-and-so would hear this. When it really does it, when Jesus says something, he's the eternal God who actually knows your situation. So he... At the time he was issuing Matthew 18's commands to work on reconciliation with one another, also at that same moment knew exactly the situation you're in at this time.
And was able to make a universal command applied to everyone.
That applies to every single person.
I mean, I don't know how he would do that, because, I know he's God, but, like... That's just weird. No, I just finished reading Modern Kinship. This is a little bit off topic, but I thought it was interesting. Then I went and listened to a podcast with David and Constantino Califf, or Calaf, I don't know how to say it. And they read the Bible, and all the injunctions against homosexuality and same-sex relationships, of which there are many, don't apply to them. They're just irrelevant, because they don't even have to, like, they don't even have to explain them away, because, like, all, you know how for, for a dozen years now, people have tried to deal with the Bible and what it says about sex and same-sex stuff, and they've made arguments on both sides. These people are just like, no, we're just not doing that. Never mind. It just doesn't apply to them. And yet, like, the resurrection of Jesus does apply to them. Like, they're going to get resurrected bodies.
All the good stuff.
All the good stuff applies to them, but all the bad stuff just doesn't matter. But when they went to a church that became open and affirming, the church rethought its stance on this issue and became open and affirming, 60% of the congregation walked away.
Really?
60%. I was like, wow, well, there's some conflict for you.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Wow. What kind of church was it, do you know?
It seems like a sort of generic, maybe. I couldn't find any denominational stuff on the website, actually. But I thought that was fascinating. Yeah. Okay, well, sorry.
Maybe what we should do is, like, run through the typical way this develops. So, let's say, and I'll use a past experience of something that did actually happen as maybe a good way of thinking it through. So, I remember someone came to me in my office, and we were just kind of offhandedly talking, and this person said, well, wouldn't it be nice if so-and-so had a chance to be music director now that our old music director has resigned? And I said, well, you know, that person, if this person wants to apply that's fine. I'd be happy about that, right? And I thought, oh, okay, well, this is a good conversation. Everything's fine. The person left. And in fact, this person turned out to be very upset about the fact that I had wanted him to apply and not just given him the position. But this person didn't tell me that. Mm-hmm. So she walked off steaming, mad.
But with a smile.
With a smile.
From
the face, I had no way of knowing there was anything wrong at all because we smiled. I think she even gave me a hug before she left. I don't know what it was.
So here's tip number one.
Yeah.
Don't lie with your face.
Right.
Don't smile.
If you're upset about something, say it.
Let it be shown on your face that you're not okay.
Right.
Don't mask your anger with your cheerful smile.
Yes.
Tip number one. Nonverbal.
No matter what the issue is,
nonverbal.
You gotta let it come to the surface and talk about it.
Yeah. Nonverbal communication counts in Matthew 18. There's ways that you can let other human people, not all cyborgs.
Right.
You have a face for a reason. You don't have to be a jerk all the time and frown at everybody, but if you're unhappy in church,
don't lie with your face.
Don't lie with your face.
But secondly, don't just talk with your face. You've got to talk with your mouth too.
Yes.
Right. You can't just frown.
Glare
right?
and walk right. away. No.
So what this person I think should have done is maybe it didn't impact her that moment how mad she was, but then she just scheduled another appointment and said, look, I was really upset about this because I think this person is owed the position and you're treating this person badly by not putting him in this position. Because I hadn't thought about that. I mean, I probably wouldn't because of certain circumstances around that person, but I hadn't even thought about it. The idea had not crossed my mind because I thought...
Well, it should have because you should know that kind of thing.
Yep.
You should be God. You should have known...
Right,
all the details, even though none of them were ever spoken out loud.
Right. So now instead of doing that, this woman decides to go and talk to another person.
Yes.
About how unfair I am.
And you're not listening.
And I'm not listening.
You're
And guess what that gave that person an opportunity to do?
Agree.
Yes. That's right. I remember a time that I was upset about this.
And Matt didn't listen to me.
And it was interesting because that was another case in which that person never told me. Didn't say anything. Right? So now what you have is a little knot of dissatisfied people that begins to grow. Mm-hmm. And they create
a narrative.
Yes.
They have to create a narrative to make it work and to make one person evil, you, and the other person holy and good.
That's what happens when you and see the great benefit of going to the person directly until the fight is over is you don't have a chance to do that. You're face to face with the person. You get to hear from that person what that person's thinking and that person's motivations, and instead of kind of having to create those and make up a story to justify yourself and to condemn the other person, which is what you do inevitably when you get someone else together who's also disgruntled. That's going to be the outcome. There's going to be a narrative created, a story created, justifying your disgruntlement and condemning the other person.
So this is really important, and this also has implications for, this is not just the church. Like this, you don't have to just do this on Sunday morning at church. This is applicable for every workplace, every school drop-off, and in marriage, because I think a lot of us go into marriage thinking that the other person knows what we're thinking.
Right.
And so we, you know, you don't have to, when I think preach the gospel and if necessary use words, that's the same kind of, well, so everybody can read my mind. Well, I'm busy being kind to people as if it was the gospel. All these people out there know why, know my motivations, know why I'm doing this, and will obviously come and worship Jesus. You know, or my husband, if I just wake up in the morning, he's going to know what I'm thinking, know what I need, and so I don't have to say it out loud. And so I don't say it out loud, and then when he
doesn't do
always
what I'm thinking,
guesses wrong, never knows what I'm thinking, then I begin to be able to vilify him.
Right.
Or the other person.
And you just kind of build it up. Then you start looking for evidence to support your vilification, right?
Of the person.
So you, what else does my husband do that confirms my assessment of his unlovingness toward me?
Yeah.
What other unloving activity is he engaged? And that's what this group did. They started accumulating evidence, right? Mm-hmm. And strengthening the narrative, because they're already looking at the situation from eyes that they've colored by that narrative, and now they've got to find more reasons, more evidence, and that also includes getting other people involved.
Right.
And when a group forms like this, there's this kind of sixth sense that they have to know who to approach, who to talk to. Right. They're not going to talk to, you know, someone they know is friendly with me or with the person they're angry at. They're going to talk with someone they know is a little bit on the edge, a bit on the margins.
Yeah.
A little bit susceptible to
somebody who's clearly been hurt by somebody else and who
right.
would totally understand
right.
why it's impossible to go talk to other people because of the pain
right.
involved
right.
with that that's kind a of conversation.
The victimology starts playing into big time. Like, I've been really, you know, hurt.
Pain is like right. the currency that then works out as the way that everybody finds and talks to each other.
Right. And I will say, no matter how hurt you are at that point, at the point when you've decided not to go back to the person you have an issue with and go to someone else, at that point you're already in sin. You've already disobeyed Jesus, and you're already in the process of dividing the church. And you need to repent and go to that person.
Immediately.
Now, if also at this stage, if you happen to be someone they've misunderstood to be disgruntled,
and you find out you talk to the wrong person.
If you're the wrong person, if a group like this comes to you, or one person like this comes to you, your role at this point is to say, wow, that sounds like you've got some real issues. Let's go talk to
that person together.
I'll go with you.
Because I know it's so hard.
Right?
I know it's so hard. I will go with you, and I'll pray with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we can work it out.
And I'll help you.
We actually had a couple do this recently. It was really great. One other way that you could do it is if you say to the person, "Hey, let's go talk to the person you're angry with or upset with, or the person who hurt you." And that person says, "No, I'm not going to do that." Then you need to tell
that person,
the angry person, or the upset person, "Okay, if you don't say anything to that person, I'm going to go tell that person, because right now you're in danger of dividing the church. You came to me,
and
you gave the wrong thing. You need to go to Lord and Savior Jesus says, go to the person you're upset with. And now when you're not doing that, you're
further harming the church and yourself, and
right.
so I'm gonna go talk to that person and tell them to go talk to you."
Yeah, right. And you can't. And if you're the guy upset person, you can't be angry about that, because you were in the process of dividing the church, and you can't say, "Well, it was no big deal," because if it was no big deal, you wouldn't have gone to somebody else in the first place.
Yeah,
you would have gone to the. So if it's a big enough deal for you to go and talk to somebody else rather than the person you're upset with, it's a big enough deal to talk to the person you're upset with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one way to avoid Matthew 18, and I always offer this up, but nobody ever takes it, and that's to not take offense.
Mm.
Like, if you can, the other option, if you don't want to confront somebody personally, face-to-face, and so you feel like your only other option is to go talk to other people, no, your only other option is actually, you can't go talk to other people, because that's disobedient. The only option you have is to genuinely, in your heart, forgive that person.
Yeah.
Completely, with no strings attached,
right.
Letting them totally off the hook, restoring your friendship with them absolutely without addressing the issue.
And don't lie to yourself and tell yourself you're doing that when you're not doing that.
Yeah. So if you can do that, then that's the only option you have. But
right.
the chances are you're not really going to be able to do it. So you're not allowed to talk to other people. You have to go talk to the person. You might as well do it right away. But nobody ever takes my advice on that one.
No. So at this point, like, okay, just we're kind of going through the anatomy of a
church conflict.
A church conflict. So at this point, the group maybe has 2, 3, 4 people involved. They're all buddy-buddy, and they're all building this narrative. And at some point, someone in the group, sometimes, this doesn't always happen, but often it does, will come to me or to the person they're all upset with and say, you know, lots of people are saying...
Yeah.
And not giving any numbers, not giving any names, but just a lot of people are saying this about you.
Yeah.
And this is a problem. Upset. And my response is always, I'm not going to listen to that. I need to know who, and I need to know how many. And if you can't give me that, I'm not going to listen. I'm going to assume it's nobody, except for you. So you need to give me names and people, or else I don't listen. And I think it's a good policy, not just for pastors, but for anybody. If anybody comes up to you and says, well, lots of people are saying this about you, you say, okay, I want to know who.
Yeah.
Because it often's two people. And, or...
Yeah.
Or even just that person who's been talking around.
The problem is that you... that makes you into a mean person who doesn't listen.
Right. Yeah, that confirms
the narrative. And that confirms the narrative that you're not hearing right. me and you don't like me and you're not listening.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, at this point, they're already in serious open rebellion against Jesus. Or I guess hidden rebellion against Jesus. So it doesn't need to be facilitated. Because what that person's trying to do is leverage power.
Yeah.
And instead of actually dealing with it in a healthy way by having a conversation about the issue, forcing you to do what
it is that they want you
or
to
else
do.
There's going to be a lot of people who don't like you.
Yeah.
And that's a power play, and you just can't.
Well, and it's hard. It's a good power play because everybody wants to be liked.
Yeah.
Like, that's the fundamental issue, is that you have had some kind of break where you don't feel like somebody who did love you loves you anymore, and
right.
so you're really in pain, and so that turns over and feeds in on itself over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the narrative is confirmed by your refusal to listen.
So.
Okay, then what?
Well, I mean, this is really the breaking point. Either if the little group stays hidden, they begin to harden themselves so much. I mean, over the course of time, the narrative becomes truth. It's not our position. This is just the way things are. And often they're at this point they'll decide, if you're the pastor especially, they'll decide, well, we're just going to leave the church.
Yeah.
And you won't have heard a thing about it.
Yeah.
You don't know. If you're the pastor, or if you're, you know, the person who's the offender, you have no idea about the narrative. You have no idea about the details. And so at some point, the group will come to you, or one person will come to you. You know, we've all decided we got to leave.
Yeah.
Why? Well, because this, this, and this, and this. And you say, well, I...
You didn't give me time. Like,
I had no time to address this while you were...
In the middle of it.
So if it's not leaving the church, it's maybe, well, we've decided our families can't be friends anymore, or we've decided our... I don't know, we can't be in this mission group anymore, or something. It doesn't have to be, if you're not a pastor.
Yeah.
It could be something where there's already been a decision made in secret without following Matthew 18 that's firm and solid because it's not been opposed by any kind of light.
Yeah.
And then it's broken. The relationship is broken in some way, almost irreparably, because the people are so who've made the decision are so burrowed down in this kind of lie they've told themselves mm-hmm. for so long.
I mean, that's been the time when I've experienced most pain, is when I had apparently offended somebody and they sat on it for a couple of years
yeah.
and then they left the church.
Years.
Because I had no idea. And everything I did confirmed to this person the original sin that I'd committed.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that I was sinning. I don't
think
that
you were
I was
sinning,
actually
but
sinning, but
you didn't
I
know
hit
you're,
the
that
fence,
felt like
and
that,
so
yeah.
everything was a contribution to the offense. Everything that I did was impossible ultimately to overcome. And
what was interesting is you were going along that time thinking this person's your friend, and
every outward appearance.
Yeah, she was smiling at you, and you were thinking, you know why? But then she would also she stopped accepting our invitations to things.
Yeah.
And, you know, making an excuse. Well, I can't come, too busy, whatever. Yeah. But we were suspicious.
So, after a while, you're like, man, something seems off, but I don't know what it is, and I don't know if it's just me. And then I tried a couple of times to say, is something wrong? Have I done something? And in each of those cases, that person just said right out to my face.
Yeah, you explicitly asked that question. I'm fine. No problem.
Everything's fine. So, but then it's not fine, but I don't know what I don't know what to do. So then you're helpless, and it's really awful.
There's also an element that often goes along with this is the spiritualizing of the conflict. So this particular group, when this was happening at Good Shepherd, it was about the Lord leading them to go somewhere where this person was honored, and one of the people claimed to be a prophet, and by not hearing him and putting him in a position of authority, and then also listening to his prophetic word about this guy who should be music director, I was violating the commands of the Lord.
Yeah.
And so it was the Lord was calling them. This was a this was a holy quest. I was standing in the way of the Lord's work and ministry. And so it ended up they left because of that. And
I mean, the spiritualizing of the imputing good spiritual motivations to your internal feelings is something that is endemic to evangelicalism overall. Like, everybody is mostly encouraged to take whatever feeling they have and then assign the source of that feeling to the Holy Spirit. This is something that happens all the time. So if you feel like doing something or you want something, it must be God that is giving you that and leading you to do that thing. You are good, always. You are always good, and then other people who don't recognize that are bad.
Right.
So you're always in the driver's seat, which is one reason why I think social media is so difficult, such a difficult place, because everybody is enacting their own goodness with a sense of spiritual, holiness overlaid, and it can't be that. Maybe you're a sinner.
Yeah.
Maybe you yourself are wrongfully offended.
Yeah.
Maybe you've done or said something that you shouldn't have said. You've taken offense where you shouldn't have taken it. You didn't follow Matthew 18. You're probably not good in this situation.
Right.
So that's why I think people don't ever do it.
I mean, remember
it depends on you recognizing your status as a sinner, as a person who doesn't do the right thing.
The lady you're talking about who left the church, when she finally sent me an email saying, I remember the day, I'm leaving the church. Thank you for all the work you've done in the past. I'm leaving the church.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you got... So I said, we got to talk. Tell me what... I have no idea what you're talking about. So we finally got on the phone. And... with you there, you were on the phone too, and she said,
well, God is calling me.
Yeah, it's the Lord, it was calling her to leave the church. And I said, now that can't be, because, you know, when we look at the New Testament and the way that God talks about the congregation, the local congregation, you're supposed to strive for unity, you're supposed to make every effort to be at one with one another and to be of one mind, and you haven't striven that for that at all. You've not talked to anybody. So I don't think the Lord
would do that.
Would call you to break apart the unity of this congregation, and you're part of this, to wrench apart the body before you've done what he said to do.
Would the Lord do that?
Why
would he contradict himself?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get into the thing. I don't believe the Lord gives you little voices like that, but that was beside the point. At this point, it was direct contradiction with what the Bible actually says mm-hmm. with regard to how God values the unity of the local congregation.
I mean, that's what the... Yeah. I'm sorry to keep talking about modern kinship, but the Lord, the Holy Spirit opened the way for these two men to marry each other. They just felt it. And the Lord did that, and they were, and their sense of their own goodness and holiness was the primary driver of their spiritual quest towards same-sex marriage. Like, so never mind that, like, that renders the voice of the Lord absolutely incoherent.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fine.
Right.
Where I'm happy with total incoherence
yeah.
in this situation, because the person who can't be violated, whose coherence can't be violated, is me.
Right.
So God has to be the one who contradicts himself in every situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's really devastating when this happens.
Well, and it's hurt me. I don't think people understand how, now I'm talking here about a more pastoral context, is I don't think people understand what it means to do that to us personally, I mean, to a pastor personally, how crushing that is to the soul of a leader of a church to just have someone just say blithely, "I'm going." We can still be friends. because we'll hang out and you know, we'll go to the same things. This person who left, this person you're talking about, said
friends.
We can still be friends. Our kids can still play together. And the fact is, no, that's not the way it works, because you've wrenched apart the body that we love. You've broken the union without reason. Now, sometimes people just have to go because there's legitimate reasons. That's a totally different thing. But when you do it in a...
Because you didn't... When you leave yeah. because you didn't do what Jesus commanded you to do in Matthew 18, there's not, like...
We're not friends.
Yeah.
We will forgive you and love you and all that kind of stuff,
but
there's not a friend. There's not a friendship because you've torn apart what we love.
Yeah.
And we dedicated our lives to. So don't think it's just like a blithe thing to walk off.
It's no big deal.
Yeah, yeah. And the same thing is true when someone just says, even if you're not a pastor, the same thing is when someone does this to you, it's so crushing.
Yeah, when they say, and the interesting thing is that usually by the time this happens, everything comes to the light. And they are relieved because they finally have told the truth after lying for a long time. And so then they begin to feel better about you. And then they're like, "Let's be friends."
And you're saying no.
But you're like, "Wah," you know.
No, you've been... No.
I mean, you've just lied to me for like 3 years.
We're clearly not friends.
And I don't know how to go on from this moment ever. Like,
right.
My recovery period is now going to be 10 years.
Right.
And it's... Right. In, so, if you... By building it up so much, when you finally break the dam, you do have a sense of huge relief, and then you can't understand why all the people around you are lying on the floor, like, bleeding and crying.
Yeah.
Because you... So...
I mean, how much better from the very first moment if you would have said, if this poor woman would have said, or the woman who came to me would have said, "You know what? I think Jesus says something about this that's going on right now. Maybe I should try trusting him and what he said to do here, and just go back to Anne, or go back to Matt, or go back to this other person and say, 'Look, I don't think we're at peace here.
It's not okay. I'm not okay.
Yeah, let's work this out.
Yeah, let's keep talking.
It's kind of like when we did our tips on marriage, we said you have to fight every fight to the end.
Yeah.
You don't let something go.
Yeah. I think that should be your model in the church.
Right.
And in all of your relationships. That's what I'm saying. Like, this is applicable to the church, but Matthew 18 is good for every situation. I mean, it doesn't mean that you always have to be in conflict with everybody over little things. Like,
often
don't
I think
like
you
the
can
same,
put the person off the hook. And
we don't like the same kind of yogurt. And and I, you know, you drink alcohol and I don't. And I can't, you know. Yeah. You could be like, "Oh, you know what? This is not a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm just going to let it go." Or that person looked at me funny one day and should I talk to them? Well, you know what? The next time they looked at me, they were smiling. So I'm just going to let it drop. You don't always have to be in conflict with people.
Yeah.
But if you have been genuinely hurt, or you have an ongoing problem with somebody and you don't know how to talk to them or be around them, you should go to them personally and say it. And then if they don't immediately hear you, because they don't understand what a big deal it is for you, and you try to underplay it.
Right.
Don't lie to yourself then and be like, okay, well, they didn't hear me. No, you go back to them and say, you know, I don't think you understood. Like, I really appreciated you talking to me about this, but I don't think you understand how deep this goes. Can we have another round on this topic? Because I actually really value you. You can always couch it in friendliness, you know, kindness, but bring it up. Like, I'm really still unhappy because I don't think you understood what this means to me. You should do that in marriage. Oh my word, do it in marriage, because eventually the break will be divorce.
Yeah.
Not just like we have to go to a different church.
Right. And that will be, we can't just be friends after that, you know?
Yes, just like, yeah. I mean, how many relationships are between women, like we thought we were friends, but now we never speak.
Yeah.
We have to go to different services at our church because we can't speak.
Right. Right.
If would be fixed if you went to the person, and then when they didn't hear you, you went to them again. When it says in Matthew 18, if they don't hear you, what that you're asked with that, that one of the things is it's saying you maybe didn't communicate how important it was. And so when you bring somebody along with you, you're saying to the person, this is so important to me.
Yeah.
Then the person has an opportunity to say, oh my word, I didn't realize it was that important.
Or I'm realize.
Sorry.
Let's talk it out.
Let's talk again.
Right.
You have to, because one subtle way that we lie to ourselves and to other people is when we whisper something, and then the person didn't hear the whisper.
Yeah.
And so then you're like, well, I wasn't heard.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And God, you know, then it becomes spiritual. Well, you know,
if I'm not being heard here, maybe God's trying me somewhere else.
Yeah.
or God's calling me out of this marriage.
Yeah. No. Maybe you whispered when you should. Maybe you were the gentle whisper of a butterfly when you should have been the loud screeching of a bluebird.
Yeah.
When there's a hawk flying by. That's what happened last night.
Yeah, it was very loud, wasn't it?
I was really like, oh my word, be quiet. I thought you were a pretty bird, but I was like, that's what you need to do if you are not okay.
Right.
Nobody knows that you're not okay.
Yeah.
Nobody can read your mind.
You know, it's actually, it's sometimes, you got to be, I think one of the other painful things about doing this is that Matthew 18 isn't about you going and convicting the person of sin. Always. Sometimes it is. But often it's also you have to examine your own motives. And the other person's going to require you to do that, right?
Yeah.
You can't, if you go in there self-justified, you might find out that, in fact, you've been in the wrong. And if you don't figure out in the first meeting, if you go back with two other people and they say...
They're going to be like...
Oh, they might say, now, wait a minute.
You're wrong.
You're the one who's wrong about this. And you've got to be willing for that to happen.
Yeah. Which means that the base of it is the forgiveness of Jesus,
right,
where you know that you're a sinner. If you don't know that you're a sinner in a deeply emotional way, if you can't examine your life and see the ways that you have injured other people and ruined things and other people's lives in some way, small and big, then this whole thing isn't going to work. So you have to go at it with your own sin,
right,
in your own face. Then you can go take the log out of your eye,
be humble.
Then you can go and think about the speck, because you know, actually a speck is super painful,
right?
A log is intolerable,
right?
But a speck is painful. So a person may be living with some kind of sin,
mm-hmm,
hurting themselves and other people,
and
a speck is still not nothing.
Yeah.
So
I mean, if you go with two or three others, you know, I mean, we are self-deluded creatures.
Yes.
We do that to ourselves all the time, and as Christians, we're self-deluded creatures who like to put, like we were talking about this earlier, but to put a noble twist spiritually noble twist on our own sin.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't get what I want in this relationship, or I don't get what I want in this church, or I don't get what I want out of this situation. So then we build up a biblical case for why we should get what we want. And really at the heart of that biblical case is pride. It's not the Bible. It's your pride, and you probably won't be able to see that. But that's again the benefit of having two or three others who could say, "Now wait a minute, are you sure? I'm not seeing this being real sin issue on the other person's part. I'm seeing this be kind of
a thing for you."
Yeah, yeah. And that's helpful. It's good. It's painful, but it's really good because then you get to take off that layer of the onion that you've encased yourself in. I guess I'm thinking back to the Narnia series with what's his name?
Oh, Eustace.
Eustace, right? He's a big dragon. He's got to peel the layers of the skin off. right. It's painful, but yeah. He's trapped. He's in pain, anyway.
He's in pain. That's the thing about this. You're in pain anyway. Don't minimize that. Like, you're in pain, and actually it's true. Jesus does want good things for you. He does want peace for you. But it's not at the expense of his own command. Like, the command produces real peace.
Right.
Whereas your method produces more pain.
Right.
So you do have to undergo a little bit of pain in order to have what Jesus calls peace. If you're not willing to obey him, you are in for so much more pain ultimately.
Yeah. And causing others pain. Everyone around you, it's a bomb that's going to explode. You're a walking bomb. And one day it's going to blow up and you're going to hurt a lot of people.
Yeah. So
there.
We fixed it. We nailed it. Good luck working out your lives.
Yeah. So I think you're having Q&A tomorrow at church. I think I'm going to bring this up because we have had a question about it recently. But I think, you know, it's good if you're a pastor, you should like bring this stuff up with your people often. Mm-hmm. This is one of the benefits of having Christian ed time that people actually go to, is you have a space to talk about it, and you don't have to just suddenly bring it up for no reason in a sermon.
In the pulpit.
By the way, I know it's Christmas, but I was thinking.
I just happened to think that we should talk about liturgy this morning and what it means, because randomly I thought I would just explain why it is that we even do what we're doing here. Let's talk about the peace.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I know people don't like the peace. One of the biggest things that people hate about Anglican worship, I think, is the peace, because you have to say it. Because it seems like you're just
greeting strangers,
and that's not really the purpose of it. The purpose of it is it's coming right before communion, which is when you partake by faith of
the visible sign of unity.
Christ
and with each other. So,
if you're not at peace with somebody in the congregation before you take communion, use that time of the peace to go up to that person and say, "Hey, we need to talk."
So
that I can take communion together.
Yeah, right? I'm gonna take communion today, but will you please talk to me during coffee hour?
Right.
And like,
if you're actively doing what we're talking about, like actively creating a narrative, actively start trying to get little people on your side, actively don't take communion. That you're lying. You're not in communion. You're not loving your neighbor. Mm-hmm. You are dividing the church. So don't take communion.
Yeah.
Until you repent.
Yeah, repent of your sins and your wickedness.
Right.
I mean, so it's one thing that's hard for me on Sunday is that I know that I inadvertently offend a lot of people by just being who I am. And I know that a lot of people have worked really hard to forgive me for stuff that they never even told me about. And that if I blink wrong on Sunday morning, people will interpret that.
You're the pastor's wife. It's not just you being... It's not your personality.
No, I'm actually...
It's your position.
It's my position. And so people have... The few times that people have come to me have been really helpful, have really corrected my posture on Sunday morning, have made me more aware of other people and more aware of my own sinfulness.
Yeah.
It works. It actually really does work when you do it.
Right.
It produces peace and hope in the church. Well, did you have any, like,
Well, you know,
I feel like we're end
missing.
On a cheerful note.
Yeah, well, I thought we should read Matthew 18 from the Passion Translation, but we didn't bring the Passion Translation.
We didn't bring the Passion Translation.
Right. I wonder what it would say.
Well, maybe we'll have to do that next time. We'll start that next time right. with a reading. Oh, man.
We didn't do our Passion reading.
It's really upsetting. I feel like writing to the people of the Passion Translation to tell them how much I think they've sinned. Face to face.
But see, we don't want to go back into it, but if it's a public, like if someone's publicly saying things like, you know, Jesus isn't really God, then it's okay
to publicly
oppose
them.
Right. You don't have to go to them privately.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
You can.
But you have to say something. You should say something.
But you don't have to.
Right.
Because they're public.
Right.
So, yeah.
But yes, we did, the one thing this show is lacking is another Passion
reading.
Right.
And I don't even have had the bad poetry book or anything.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? As a way of, I would like to read something. I was given some books about Barbara Pym, because whom I love. And I would like to read a little very funny thing. Okay, can I read this?
Yes.
It is good that the clergy themselves are well represented in this volume, because Pym herself was so admiringly critical of them. I think she was intrigued and puzzled, loving and also slightly suspicious, as if she could not always believe their intentions. Were they, perhaps, at times too good to be true? Implicit at the heart of her novels lies one crucial question. What do the clergy actually do with their time? Of course they pray, and this is of vital importance. They officiate at services, reassuring their congregation with this consolation of the sacraments and the confidence of the pulpit. They open fetes, bazaars, jumble sales, and tombolas. They tend to the sick and dying. But can this really be all? They are forever telling their parishioners that they are rushed off their feet. But can this be accurate? If so, then why are they seen holding ping-pong bats and quoting inappropriate passages from Keats or Milton? How do they find time to woo unsuitable women or to enjoy light Sunday suppers in the company of spinsters who worry about birds, woodworm, and the Jesuits?
That's awesome.
Your weekly reading about Barbara Pym. What do they actually do?
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean, we just don't do anything, really.
We don't do anything.
Yeah, work one day a week.
And there it is.
That's it.
So.
I do. It's an interesting quote, because I do think that sometimes people in a parish, any parish, they don't think they're work. So the time your pastor's spending with you, he's not working. He's just, of course, because you're such a wonderful person, he wants to be around you. This is time off for him. Why shouldn't he be working somewhere? When in fact, I mean, and I love all my parishioners, but, you know, you do technically count that as work. When you're meeting with a parishioner.
When you're with them?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
So,
So this is the rector, you know, spending an evening with the ladies who like the birds. That rector's working at that point. He's being
a
pastor.
I don't know, though. Pym's vicars are questionable as we go through. Like, some of them might actually not be working.
Well, not the ones who are wooing in
inappropriate ways. Yes. I mean, this is turning out to be a really nice book. It's called No Soft Incense, Barbara Pym and the Church. Right. So, well, I think we should end this and go collect our children from their sportsing prowess. And
they're all very tired.
Yeah, they do look exhausted. They're running back and forth across the field.
Well, our son isn't really running.
He's not running.
He's
you're so...
He's jogging in a very...
You're so critical.
It's just funny. All of our children, he's like, if we say to do something, like clean the kitchen, he's the first thing. I'll walk in like 5 minutes later, and he'll be literally lying on the floor. Literally lying on the ground. And it's a dirty floor. I mean, what's he doing? What are you doing?
Oh.
So.
Well, he thinks about things.
I know.
And the other ones reads don't.
Anything. He's a thinker.
He's a lover, not a fighter. So. Okay, well, thank you for listening, and we will totally be back next week.